Laura and Tommy were lovers. He wanted to give her everything. Flowers, presents, and most of all, a wedding ring. He saw a sign for a stock car race. $1,000 prize, it read. He couldn't get Laura on the phone. So to her mother, Tommy said, tell Laura I love her. Tell Laura I need her. Tell Laura I may be late. I've something to do that cannot wait. He drove his car to the racing ground. He was the youngest driver there, and the crowd roared as they started the race. Round the track they drove at a deadly pace.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. So glad to have you with us today on the Guy James Show. Good to be here once again. Here we are in the middle of the week, hump day to a lot of people, Wednesday. And why did you look at me funny when I said hump day, Ryan? I know what you were thinking.
I'm a couple of generations removed. The word hump means something different to me, so I will continue with my news.
Why are you insulting my generation? You think we don't know things like that?
No. But
well, you think we're a bunch of, to use an old word, squares?
No. You're definitely not a square.
Okay. All right. I know full well. Well, let's forget that.
Okay.
Anyway, Ryan's here. He's getting the news together amongst a bunch of other things today. I'm here. We've got a great show lined up for you today. I do want to let you know a couple of things. We're having a great guest on in a little while. Let me see here. What time is that going to be? Anyway, well, I'm not supposed to tell you what time. See, I'm supposed to keep teasing you. And Mark Manning's going to be with us, who made the great documentary Caught in the Crossfire, The Untold Story of Fallujah. Tomorrow, Helen Thomas is going to be with us tomorrow. Yes, indeed, Helen Thomas. I spoke with Helen earlier today. What, you know, I love her. I love Helen Thomas. I've spoken to her several times, and I think she's got one of the greatest sense of humor. You know, the right-wingers try to paint her as some kind of an ogre or something, and she's got one of the greatest sense of humor of anybody I think I've ever met in my life. Truly, she does. Did you see C-SPAN this morning, anybody? Oh, man. The call-ins from the right, the left, and the independents, the crazies were out this morning. And I know a lot of you monitor C-SPAN. A guy on there this morning from the right called in and says, well, as far as justifying the war, 9/11 is a good enough document for me. George Bush is doing his right. Oh, boy. Perfect example of the mindset of the idiot right-wingers who hang on to their belief that Bush is their savior no matter what. And did you see his speech today? I know some of you did. Why are they doing this? Do you understand it? I don't. Maybe they want to just see how far down his poll numbers can go. Maybe Karl Rove and the gang got some sort of an office pool up, guessing how far into the 20s his numbers can fall. You know, and I'm going to be interested to see how far they can go. I want to know what I'm dealing with. I know a lot of you do, too. I want to know just how many people will stick with him no matter what. So, you know, we want to know what our neighbors are thinking. And, you know, one of them said at the speech today, thank God you're my commander-in-chief. Do they give these people OxyContin before they enter the room? Did you see the people sitting behind Bush in that speech today? They're either stoned or hypnotized, one or the other. I'm not sure. They got that Stepford look to their, you know, they really do. And, you know, surely by now they, and I, God, I get tired of talking about it. I do. But they've got to know by now that the more they send this guy out, the more the public realizes that he's an incompetent clown pretending to care about the well-being of the rest of us. He doesn't give a damn about the rest of us. Look what happened when they sent him out to spin his Social Security message. It went down and down and down until, oh, guess what? We just didn't hear about it anymore. Wasn't that interesting? And I found it interesting. But another day for Mr. Bush, and a lot of folks talking about the spying going on, the NSA thing, and how they wanted to have no warrant searches right after 9/11. These people, I think they're crazy, that kind of thing. And I think of people who will willingly give up those kind of freedoms. I think there's something wrong with them, too. You hear these people say, well, as long as I'm not doing anything wrong, I don't have anything to worry about. You know, it starts one little chip at a time. You know, an iceberg, it melts slowly. I wonder how many of you are really experiencing the same kind of uneasiness that occasionally drifts into my mind nowadays. You know, it seems to be happening more and more and more as this Bush administration goes on. And it really makes me sad to know that these troubling notions are the kind which I never thought I'd encounter in my lifetime. I was, you know, as I've told many of you before, I was raised in the 50s and 60s, and during a time when America was, for the most part, really peaceful and still pure in the minds of most people, and I was taught to believe that our country was the best and the brightest, the invincible great power, the beacon of hope for the rest of the world. And yes, it was a good time to grow up. And I know some of my beliefs of those days were an illusion. I know that. But for there really was racial strife and division in our nation. The Cold War was peaking, and the Soviet Union and the United States were constantly rattling their sabers at one another. We had the Cuban Missile Crisis, the assassination of our beloved President John Kennedy. Khrushchev, remember that, banging his shoe on the desk in the United Nations and his famous "We will bury you" statement. But all in all, it was a great time to be an American. It was an age of innocence. It truly was. But along came Vietnam, and then things started to go downhill. Vietnam caused a terrible divide in this country, and there always is in the times of trouble for our nation, as there always is. There were those who backed our leaders, whether they were right or wrong. It didn't matter, and it was. I remember it just as clearly as today. There were people who said that Vietnam War was a great thing, just like they're saying the Iraq War is a great thing, and they come hell or high water, they were going to stick with it, and they stay the course. It didn't matter because we're America, by God, and we're always right. Well, some of us began to have second thoughts about always being right. It was traumatic for us because, you know, since we were old enough to know what was going on, our parents, who many of them were still basking in the pride and the glow of the great victory in the Second World War, and all the glorious patriotism that went along with it, our parents taught us that we could do no wrong, this country could do no wrong, and we believed it. So these new thoughts many of us started to have during Vietnam, these thoughts and ideas that America was involved in something totally wrong for our nation, those thoughts caused trouble between the generations. And for the first time, many of us accused our government leadership of failing the people of the United States. There were riots. I know a lot of you remember that. There were riots and demonstrations and even killings on college campuses all across America. It was a bad time. It was a very bad time. But through all of that, I never lost faith in the people of the United States. I still thought that because of the good hearts and minds of the people of this country, that we were still the best and the brightest. And I've continued to think that right up until just a few short years ago. And now I'm having doubts, and it troubles me. It troubles me terribly, and I don't want to have the thoughts about my America that I'm having now. I feel like I'm losing something very precious to me, something irreplaceable, something that can never be returned to me. My faith in the American people is being shaken to its very foundation, and I feel a sense of absolute desperation about it that really I've never experienced before. And I know a lot of you feel the same way. I hear from you. And I feel like we're on the road to ruin, and there'll be no way out of it if we don't turn back soon. To stay the course of Mr. Bush's will lead us to ruin. And just during the past couple of months, I've started to hear talk from the right that perhaps we have too much free speech, perhaps we have too much freedom. They're saying that maybe we need to sacrifice some of those things to keep safe from the evils of terrorism. You know, it's not so bad that I hear people like Limbaugh and Hannity and Bortz and Savage and others like them saying these things. It's not so bad that some of the politicians on the right, like Tom DeLay, agree with them. What is so bad is that I'm starting to hear it from the people, starting to read it in the editorials in the newspaper, starting to hear it in the call-in shows, the people agreeing that maybe we need to give up some of those sacred rights guaranteed by our Constitution and the Bill of Rights. My God, what's wrong with people saying those things? How could the people of this wonderful nation, and still the best nation on earth, even consider forsaking some of their freedoms in order to be safe from terrorism? How have the minds of millions been so warped and twisted that they'd even think of such things, let alone speaking about them out loud? Why are they allowing the twisted minds of some of our our leaders right now to influence them in such a profound way that they would actually willingly give up some of their freedoms? Why have they allowed the right-wing media horse to tell them how to think? How's this happened? This isn't some banana republic. We vote. You know, not in some nation led by despots. That's not where we're at. But right here, within view of the Statue of Liberty, I think Lady Liberty's got to have tears running down her cheeks. And Ann Coulter and Sean Hannity and Michael Savage, they want to call Democrats traitors. What the hell do you call those people who will willingly give up the freedoms that were bought and protected by the blood of American patriots down through the years? They are either monumental cowards or they're traitors to this nation. Take your pick. If you are willing to give up your freedom for any reason, you're the one that's a traitor to this nation. This nation was founded upon freedom. All of our freedoms. And if you're willing to give any of them up now, you're wrong. You're terribly wrong. Our forefathers would be ashamed of people wanting to give up some of their freedoms for any reason. What was it? I'm trying to think. Was it Ben Franklin said those who would give up their freedoms for temporary safety deserved neither? I agree. You know, the very mention of sacrificing some of our freedoms for any reason whatsoever absolutely makes me ill. And I wonder how many of those who are blinded by the right-wing media onslaught understand what happened in Nazi Germany in the early 1930s. I wonder if they understand that it all happened gradually, ever so slowly. The stormtroopers didn't come walking through the street unannounced one day. No, little by little by little, people's freedoms were taken away until one day the will of the people didn't matter anymore because the power had been handed to someone who was going to take care of them. Ah, yes, someone who would protect them from the evils of the outside world. Someone who had their best interest in mind. Someone who thought the military was the answer to all their problems. Someone who had world domination in mind. It was a disease. It was a disease that swept over that nation like a whirlwind. It swept up even some good people who thought they were doing the right thing. And there are good people in America right now with views that they think are the right thing who are so terribly wrong. Is this going to happen in my America? Are they going to try? Yeah, they're going to try. They're already trying. And I want to warn you, if this gang of neocon swindlers in Congress right now and the president and the vice president, if they have their way, you might as well plan on living in a country where if you say something they don't like, you'll be having your front door knocked down at midnight by a bunch of jackbooted thugs. I know some people who lived through it, and they'll tell you that they never thought it could happen to them, but it did. Oh, it did, all right. Their neighbors said, we don't have anything to fear, so why should we worry about giving up some of our freedoms? We're not doing anything wrong. But it happened. Untold millions of people died because the people allowed it to happen. Little by little by little. And don't you see, that is exactly what's happening today. Exactly what's happening today. I hope you realize that. I want you to be aware of that. Ryan and I were talking before the show about cultural things here in this country. And I see a lot of apathy. I think Ryan's generation is showing a lot of apathy about the government. And I think the reason a lot of them are showing apathy right now is because there's no draft. If you had to worry about going to Iraq and getting your ass hauled down to the recruiting station and you didn't want to go, but you were going to go because you were drafted, I think things would change a lot here in this country. Now, I'm not advocating a draft. But isn't it something that when your own neck is on the line, like during Vietnam, you didn't have a choice unless you were George Bush or Dick Cheney wanting to get away from it. But and there was lots of reasons people didn't go to Vietnam, but many thousands did. What is it, 55, 58,000 lost their lives, and not many of them wanted to do that. Not many of them wanted to be there, but they had to go because they were getting drafted. But today, nobody has to fear that. And so it's easy to put this war in the back burner and not think much about it by a lot of our younger people today. I understand that. But it's something to think about. Hey, I'd like for you to give us a call and let us know what you think about all of this. 1-866, toll-free, by the way, Arnickel, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We've got many things to talk about today. We're going to talk about in a little while. Mark Manning's going to be here about the caught in the crossfire, the untold story of Fallujah. That's going to be a very, very interesting interview. And if you've got questions, comments about it, I'd like you to give us a call. We're going to take a little break. Going to be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rush Limbaugh.
They say that I'm sleaze and elitist. You please, everybody disagrees with my rap. I'm horrendous, I'm appalling. My ratings now are falling because I'm so full of crap. With condescending tribes making money selling lies. You might say everybody hates my guts. I'm offensive, I'm a bigot, I'm a fraud. Can you dig it? I'm a sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic cuts.
I'm a Nazi.
That's right.
I really am.
Because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle class because I'm a fat conservative butthead with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative butthead with the face of a horse's ass.
I have a subhuman figure, a huge rear end. My brain? That's another story.
It's quite another story.
I have a face the size of a washtub. And my ass is as big as Missouri. Yes!
This bastard is sick. He's a fat bomb as big and his ass is as big as Missouri.
Yes, Terry Bob! Manipulating statements exaggerate the truth. I can't believe they hate my show. Inspires. It's not just because I'm stupid. It's not just because I'm scum. It's just because Republicans are liars. I am heartless. I am vain, insensitive, insane. They say that I'm a national disgrace. I am nasty, insulting, basically revolting. I'm a concentrated pile of human waste. Because I'm a Nazi.
I really am,
because I'm a Nazi. That's right.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle classes.
I'm a sick Republican sleazeball with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a sick Republican sleazeball with the face of a horse's ass.
They say that this is not about my vanity. They doubt my sanity. They think I'm nuts. I am a cyst on the ass of humanity. New Republican slogan, read my pets.
Read his books.
from the bowels of Eve, comes the voice of Rush Limbaugh. In closing, let me say that each and every day, I'm an evil, rotten, egotistical snob. I'm the cop of the cop of Joe McCarthy-like Gestapo, the right-wing, foam-of-the-mouth, jack-booted slob, the democratic trashing, years of liberal bashing with the equivalent compassion of a grommet. With the IQ of a fig, I'm a fat, obnoxious pig. And the truth of the matter is, I'm vomit, because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
I really am, because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi. I don't care about the middle class, because I'm a fear-mongering scumbag with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat
conservative buckhead. Hey, sick Republican sleazeball. Fear-mongering scumbag.
Oh.
Egotistical ass bite.
Yes.
Mean-spirited, hum-wallering fat conservative tots
with
the face
of a horse's ass.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Rush, we'd like to thank you, Rush, for calling in and singing that for us today. I think you did a great job, and those are the Limbets backing him up there. I think they did a nice job, and he called us special to sing that song to you. I know some of you have heard him sing it before, but that's always worth another play. I love that one. How many of you watched David Letterman last night? The top 10 reason. This is the top 10 reasons that Dick Cheney won't resign, and I attribute to David Letterman. I thought these were good. The top 10 reasons Dick Cheney won't resign. Number 10, he's trying to fix up Condi Rice with his daughter. Number 9, turns out when you shoot somebody, if you're not vice president, you got to do time. Number 8, Bush leaves at 2 every day, and then it's margaritas and Fritos. Number 7, set the solitaire high score in his office computer. Number 6, want to see if he can help Bush get his approval ratings under 10. Number 5, of the top 10 reasons Dick Cheney won't resign, it's too hard to give up vice presidential discount at the D.C. area Sam Goody stores. Number 4, he wants to stay on the job until every country in the world hates us. Number 3, the extra zappy White House defibrillators. Number 2, the undisclosed list, location has foosball and whores. And number 1, the number 1 reason Dick Cheney won't resign, why quit when things are going so well? Oh, yeah. So I think Dick's going to be around for a while. Don't forget, we got that interview coming up, 866-546-5254. We hope you'll give us a call, and I hope some of you will have some questions for Mark Manning in a little while when we have him on. Somebody sent me, I don't know what to call this, it's been edited a little bit, but they sent me these writings, and I want to read them to you. And it's actually from democraticunderground.com, M. Sergeant 213, and I want to read it to you, because it certainly mirrors my thoughts in so many ways. And I quote it. I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed of this president, aren't you? After watching his press conference today, a sense of shame overtook me. I'm ashamed that he took to the podium today as if he emptied out a container of laughing gas. I'm ashamed of a president who has the temerity to laugh when asked a question about war. I'm ashamed of the horrors of the Fourth Estate who care more about having the honor of being the butt of one of the president's jokes than about exposing the truth to the American people. I'm ashamed that millions of my fellow Americans are so scared and so desperate for leadership that they'll believe this president's BS. I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed of this president, this megalomaniac hell-bent on leaving his ass print on the map of the Middle East, no matter how much destruction is wrought and no matter how much blood flows in the streets of lands that never threatened us. I'm ashamed that when I see the American flag waving, images of flag-draped coffins flash in my mind from this war. I'm ashamed of Freedom's March TM. Ashamed when I see villages reduced to rubble. Ashamed when I see the tiny little corpses. God, they're so painfully tiny. Lined up in a row. Little angels wrapped in colorful blankets that starkly contrast against their gray tinged faces. Ashamed when I see wailing Iraqis slamming their hands against plane unvarnished coffins over and over asking, why is this democracy? Why? When I see those images of funeral of broken families, I want to crawl into my TV. I want to go to them and grab their slumped shoulders and scream, I'm sorry. Good God, I'm so sorry. I want to leave. I want us to leave. Believe me, but they won't listen. No one listens anymore. I'm ashamed that that word massacre is even uttered in connection with our actions in Iraq. I'm ashamed it's not just one massacre that is alleged, but two. I'm ashamed it's gotten to the point that I can't even tell this little voice inside of me to shut up. That little voice that says maybe, just maybe it could be true. That the impossible may be plausible. Before this war, I would have rejected such claims outright, but that voice of plausibility is the consequence of those black hoods. It's the consequence of those leashes, those snarling dogs. It's the consequence of those detainees chained to bed frames, of naked pyramids, of forced sex acts, of beatings, and blood-streaked floors. I am ashamed. Ashamed that justice is no longer blindfolded, but gagged. Ashamed that in America, I can only protest in free speech zones the size of postage stamps. Ashamed that by the time I'll take my oath as an officer of the court to support the Constitution, I'll be swearing to uphold a tattered document that has managed to survive over 200 years only to be shredded by this president in less than 8. So, someone going to law school wrote that. I think it pretty well sums up the feelings of many, many, many millions of Americans right now. It's a sad time for America. Really is. I sure hope we can get things straightened out. The question of the day on MSNBC, I know a lot of you saw it, a lot of people voted on it, but 30-some thousand responses last time I saw. Do you agree, the question of the day on MSNBC, do you agree with President Bush that real progress is being made in Iraq? Yes, 18%. No, 82%. And yet, day by day, hour by hour, the Bush forces are out in force, blaming it all on the media. I saw Laura Ingraham today blaming it on the media. She was in Iraq, you know. Ah, yes. And she saw what the military wanted her to see. And she acts like, oh, it's all good news. A little bit of bad news, but it's mostly good news. That's from Laura Ingraham. Absolutely blinded to the fact of the atrocities, the horrors of war that are taking place over there, the lack of progress in getting the Iraqi troops trained properly, the lack of progress in getting the infrastructure of Iraq back to what it was, even in Saddam's administration, the lack of progress of getting the oil to pump. You remember when Paul Wolfowitz said, not to worry because the oil from Iraq will pay for rebuilding that country. And it's at the oil pumping there now is not even at pre-war levels. You remember all these stories from this administration about why we went into Iraq and how great it was going to be, and we're exporting democracy to those countries? Are you aware of the fact that this democracy that we're exporting, that they're bragging about now, in Afghanistan, a man changed his religion from being Muslim to Christian, and they're going to execute him? Wow, we've done a good job exporting our democracy, haven't we? Haven't we, though? That's some kind of democracy when you... Imagine that. You're a good old Presbyterian here in the United States, and you decide you want to turn Catholic. I said, well, if you do, you're dead, brother. You're dead. That's what he's doing. And they want to kill him. This is a government we approve of. This is a government we brag about installing. These people are... I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. But I do know we can't take the kind of democracy we have in this country and take it someplace else and say, here, use this. It just doesn't work. It just does not. Who knows how many years it'll be in Iraq before things are right? Who knows how bad the civil war in Iraq will get before peace comes to that nation again? Who knows? I have no idea. And if the Bush administration were able to admit it, willing to admit it, they would they'd tell you they don't know either, because they don't. They never had a plan for after the first foray into Baghdad. They had no plans for that. Remember how they talked, how they were going to cheer us with flowers and going to be so happy. Now the average Iraqi has got hell to pay in his own country. And a lot of it because of the way Bush planned this whole thing. I don't know. So think about it. If you're one of those folks that still thinks Georgie does everything right, or most things right, or this war is a noble, noble thing, I have to wonder. I really do have to. Well, we promised you that we're going to have a great guest with us today. We promised you that we were going to have Mark Manning on with us, and he's caught in the crossfire. The untold story of Fallujah, and it's a documentary that I hope everybody gets to see. And, ladies and gentlemen, Mark Manning. Mark, are you with us?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's very good to have you on the program today. I got to see the trailer of your documentary today. I think it's something everybody in America not only should watch, I guess we all should be made to watch it. How was it that you got into Fallujah when hardly anybody else in the West did?
Well, I think one of the things is that I tried. I had the desire to find out what was going on to the civilians there. That was a big, big help. And also, I had met some amazingly courageous Iraqi citizens who were in Jordan, actually, where I was filming another film, testifying there about what had happened in Fallujah. And we became friends, and they asked me if I wanted to come into Fallujah with them. They asked me to help them deliver some medicine that Global Exchange and military families had raised funds and purchased medicine for Fallujah. But there was really no way to get it in there, so the Iraqis took it on themselves, Iraqi citizens, to bring aid into Fallujah, and they asked me to help them get through the checkpoints. You know, as being an American citizen, that tends to help. So it was a combined effort. We went in there, we took medicine to Fallujah General Hospital, and also documented what had happened to the civilians in that city.
Now, as I understand it, Fallujah had around 350,000 citizens before the attack. What was it down to by the time you got in with the help?
Well, the Pentagon numbers are 250,000, and that varies up to 500, depending on who you talk to. But the low ball number is 250,000 civilians. And they forced the evacuation on the second siege in November. They forced the evacuation of the city. The citizens there were told to either leave or die. But even the Pentagon estimates are that 10 to 20% of the population stayed inside the city. So that's somewhere between 25 and 50,000 civilians. And nobody really knows what happened to them. How many civilians were killed in there? It's unknown at this point. There are 9 mass graves that I've been to, but the actual number of civilian deaths is unknown. It's estimated to be as high as 5,000, maybe more. But when we got back in, you know, the city had been devastated, and it was really empty of living people at that point. And some people started pouring back into the city to start burying their dead and looking for family members they'd left in there. It was really a ghost town when I got in there.
Is it true that they told a certain segment of the male population that they could not leave?
You know, I've heard that, and I've heard that from Iraqis myself, but I'm not sure if that's actually true or not. That's something that the Iraqis are saying, that fighting-age men were not allowed to leave. But I don't know whether that's true or not. I haven't heard a report from the military denying it or saying that it's true. But I do know that whoever was left inside that city, the city was then declared a live fire zone. And if you went outside or you were caught in a scope, you were shot. And, you know, it's pretty hard to determine who's a civilian and who's not when the fire's on. So it really became a killing zone inside that city.
Were you given any heat by the military as far as going in? How much trouble did you have getting in?
No, surprisingly, very little. The Marines that I ran into, the boots on the ground, the guys doing the fighting that I found were, you know, really good people. And when they saw that we had medicine, they actually argued with their commanding officers to let us in. They knew that no aid was getting in there, and they, you know, happy to see it arrive. So military, you know, at that point, the fighting was still pretty much on. It was still pretty much a chaotic place, and they were surprised to see a Westerner without, you know, any kind of protection or unembedded that I was, but they let us in. They gave us the retina scans that they gave to everybody, and then they did let us in. So that was something I could say positive about that.
Well, you know, one of the questions I wanted to ask you, were you looked at with a wary eye by the Iraqis once you went in? I think we've got a bad phone connection.
I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that the people on the ground in Fallujah definitely looked at me with a lot of original and hate and anger. When I lived with them, and I lived in a refugee farm where 60 people were living in a one-room house. And when they learned that I was there to tell the truth, to document what was happening to the civilians, when they learned that I was not embedded, that I didn't have an affiliation with any corporate media outlet, they respected me, and they gave me a lot of care, and they protected me, they sheltered me, and they risked their lives to help me tell that story. So, you know, they had a lot of faith that some truth was going to come out from this adventure of dealing with this Westerner, and they went out of their way to help me get in there and film that story.
Well, now, Mark, if you were in there and the people were trusting you by this time and all, you must have met a lot of Al-Qaeda people, right?
No, I just met civilians, you know. People of Fallujah will tell you that they were fighting for their city. The Marines, I think, or the Pentagon, even the military sources now say they only found 150 foreign fighters in that city. Predominantly, it was Iraqis and people of Fallujah that felt that they were defending their city. What I really met was children. The average Fallujah family has 6 to 8 children, so the majority of the population of Fallujah was children. When you were in the refugee areas, and I mean a refugee area, I use that term loosely because there was no aid given to the civilians of Fallujah. When they were forced to leave the city, they were given nowhere to go, no food, no shelter, no water, no clothing, nothing. They were just forced out into the surrounding countryside and still are really living that way. So it was just refugees and with no aid given to them. And again, it was mainly children. This farmhouse was 60 people in one room, and most of them were children and women and elderly people. I never saw a hint of that.
I have to wonder, what's left of the city now?
Well, all the businesses have been destroyed. Downtown is in complete rubble. So the infrastructure of the city has been destroyed. Then most of the homes have been damaged. A lot of city blocks have just been taken out by airstrikes. The city is devastated. It is not, you know, if it was an American city, we would say it's been completely destroyed.
Was that the original aim, or is that just the consequence of what happened? What do you know of the military's plans? Was it to teach them a lesson and level their city?
I think it's a really important question, and I don't have the answer to that because I'm not in the mind of the military planner. But I do know that the city was destroyed, and the Iraqi people definitely feel, the people of Fallujah definitely feel, they were the victims of punishment, that they were made an example of. This is what happens to people who support the resistance. And it's called collective punishment, and they feel that they've been the victim of that policy. Of course, it had the absolute opposite effect, and the resistance exploded in Iraq after Fallujah. And I think a lot of Americans dying in Iraq right now are a direct consequence of this disregard for civilian life, and it's fueling this hatred against the United States. And Fallujah is a famous city. It's a holy city. It's called the City of Mosques. It goes through bloodlines all through the Middle East. Folk songs being written about it now. There's brochures in Syria and Jordan on the streets of Palestine about what the American government did to the city of Fallujah and the people there. And it really has fueled the explosion of insurgency in Iraq today.
This is an amazing story. You know, yesterday we came across a quote by Gandhi, and I think it fits Fallujah perfectly. To quote Gandhi, he said, "What difference does it make to the dead, the orphans, and the homeless whether the mad destruction is wrought under the name of totalitarianism or the holy name of liberty and democracy?" And, you know, it doesn't make any difference to the orphans and the homeless. When they're dead, they're dead, and I guess it doesn't matter how it happened. But this, you say, we ended up with once again, we apologize for a bad phone connection. There were 150 people that were, boy, it is a bad connection. Mark, can we call you back?
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll call you back on that other number.
Okay, either number's fine.
All right, we'll call you right back. We apologize to our listeners. We want to call back and get that up because I want you to hear the rest of that. I think maybe it might have been on a cell phone or a portable phone either way. And we'll get Mark right back on the phone. But isn't this a amazing story? And I urge all of you to get this caught in the crossfire, the untold story of Fallujah. It's an amazing story. And Mark risked his life to go in there and get this thing. I'm not sure how long it is altogether. Back on the phone. But there he is, completely foreign land. How are we doing? All right, you getting that back on the phone? All right, got him back on the line now. Okay, let's put Mark back. Now we hope it's a little better this time. Are you with us, Mark?
I'm here.
Okay, I still hear some of it in the background. Well, anyway, let's carry on. We'll make the best of it. Where are the people of Fallujah today? How many of them are back in the city? Do we have a death toll of what actually happened there?
There is still no death toll. There are the mass graves. You know, our policy is that we do not count Iraqi deaths, and that policy has been duly enforced. So it's an unknown. The people of Fallujah are calling for an investigation. They're asking that those mass graves be exhumed. But no, there's really no count. And then right now, I think there's an estimate that there's 100,000 people that have been put back into the city, a lot of them by force. The refugee areas were raided, and people were told they had to return to the city. So, you know, what they feel, so the news reports wouldn't get out about the conditions of the refugees. I got a call from there 2 days ago where there's still no roof building. The clinics are still, the hospital clinics are still destroyed. The checkpoints are all manned by Shias. It's a live fire zone still for the nighttime curfew. Marines are still dying in there. The resistance is back. It's still a horrific place. And I think our president told us the other day that the Fallujah was a success and it's been pacified. And if that's what a pacification project looked like, I don't think we should be proud of that in any way.
Well, I'm a little bit of a student of history, and I imagine you are too, being a documentary filmmaker. In other wars, it seems to me there have been episodes like this that ended up in a war crime trial.
Yeah, it usually depends on who wins.
Yeah.
You know, and right. But there are a lot of people in Fallujah that are calling for an international investigation there. They feel that they've been the victims of war crimes. They feel there's a lot of talk there of chemical weapons that were used against the civilian population. And they are asking that the UN come in and do an investigation, that start to look at the DU problem there, the depleted uranium, exhume some of the mass graves and take, you know, bone and tissue samples to try to find out what happened there. So will that happen? You know, who knows? But I just want to portray that the people of Fallujah are asking for that.
Well, it seems to me that as long as the Bush administration has their way in Iraq, they probably won't let the UN in to do that, will they?
No, they're not letting anybody into Fallujah right now. You know, me getting in and out of there, after that, they really clamped down on that city. I know that an Iraqi doctor got in there and did some filming recently, and then he was detained, and his cameras were taken and the tapes taken. Another friend of mine just got out of one of those areas last week with some pictures of Hadith, actually, that the hospital had been destroyed by an airstrike, and she was detained and her pictures were taken. So there's a pretty hard effort to suppress information coming out of Iraq right now in these combat areas.
How did you get out of there? Did they know you were going, when you went in and you had your retina scan and all that, did they know you were going to go in and do filming?
No, they didn't. It was one of those nice military policies that I just chose to follow, that don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah.
And no, they didn't know we were filming, and we went out of our way to keep the cameras hidden from all pertinent eyes, you know, the resistance, the Iraqi National Guard, the American authorities. There's a term in Iraq, it's called forbidden, you know, and the Iraqis all know that filming is forbidden. And that's something that we don't know here in America. We're told, oh, we only hear the bad news. Not so. We haven't heard 1% of what it's really like in these war zones for the civilians in Iraq, and it is forbidden to go film that.
Oh,
and
that's a distressing thing you just said.
For sure. I mean, through Western Iraq and these villages where these large operations are going on, they're not even taking the embedded reporters anymore.
Incredible. Incredible. Well, what do you see as the future for Fallujah right now? Is the military keeping their boot on the neck of the people of Fallujah, or is it let up? How's it going now?
No, there's still a curfew in there at night. There's still patrols in the city. There's still the checkpoints and the retina scans. It's a very violent place there. The resistance is back now. There's fighting going on. I've said Marines are still dying in there. Civilians are still dying in there. I don't think anything will get better in Fallujah until we withdraw. The people of Fallujah are very capable of rebuilding their city. They certainly don't need us for that. They're just waiting, you know, until they have their freedom back.
What an awful story. How long is your documentary, by the way, Al?
It's a short form. It's 20 minutes, and it just strictly tells the story of the civilians there. We stay out of the politics. We just show what the war in Fallujah was like for the civilians of that city.
Well, they're the people that really matter when it all comes down to it. They're why the wars take place, the civilians, but sometimes they end up on the short end of the stick. They can order. Wow, something. They can order this at conceptionmedia.net.
That's correct, conceptionmedia.net, and we're giving the proceeds, 25% of all the net proceeds, to the Iraqi people. Of Fallujah and Haditha and Al-Qaim in these cities. We're supporting the Iraqi relief efforts that are being done by the Iraqi people. So we're trying to fund that through the sale of this documentary.
One thing I did want to ask you, too, before we go, you said we don't keep body counts, but, you know, of course there has to be word on the street in Fallujah. You know what percentage of the deaths were women and children?
I know that in one mass grave, I saw 750 women and children buried.
Oh, my God. In one mass, you saw that?
Yeah.
Oh. How do you ever get that out of your mind?
No, you really don't. I ran into a lot of children that were wandering the streets looking for their parents, and I ran into a lot of women that were wandering the streets looking for their children. It was a pretty horrific situation, and what we don't know here is there were two sieges. There was an April siege and a November siege, and In the April siege, they did not empty the city first, so there was a lot of those civilian casualties happened in April also of 2004.
Collateral damage.
Yeah. Collateral damage.
That's what they'll be called. Well, Mark, I really thank you so much for telling us this horrific story, and I admire you so much for doing what you did going in there. It took a lot of courage to do it, and we thank you for doing that. The public has the right to know this. You should know it.
I think it's impossible for us to make rational decisions about the Iraq War if we're not getting the true story out of there. And, you know, that's, again, we're not trying to preach with our message. We're just trying to show what happened to the civilians. And then, you know, hang your politics at the door, watch the film, and then pick it back out on the way out and see how you really feel after you've seen what it's like for the innocents.
Yeah,
right.
The truth is the truth, regardless of your politics. And it's going to be hard to deny what you told us. Mark Manning, thank you so much for being on the program today. We appreciate your time, and we appreciate so much what you've done.
My pleasure. Sorry for the phone situation, but at least we're working on getting
it. Oh, everybody
the
heard us okay. Just had a little noise in the background. So I thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
What a story. What an awful story. Heard rumors about this for a long, long time, and didn't want to comment too much about it for a long, long time, because if you don't know, and you don't know anybody that's actually been there, I do know one soldier who was on the perimeter of Fallujah when they circled the city and forced everybody out. Of course, he didn't see the terrible violence that took place inside. How can you do that to women and children? Set a mass grave of 750. Innocent men or women and children. 750 women and children. Were they Al-Qaeda? Were they these nasty insurgents? I'll tell you one thing. This just points out to me one more time that we have inflamed the passions of people over there. That this was not hotbed of terrorism like the Bush administration tried to foist that idea upon us. This was not. It is now. There isn't any question. It's been a magnet for terrorist audience. So what do we do now? We went in on the basis of a lie that it was a haven for terrorists. They weren't there, but they came to join the fray now. And now we've got terrorists from all over the Middle East in there. We've got people wanting to defend their own country. What do we do now? Do we stay the course? Do we? Do we cause another Fallujah someplace? Do we as American citizens turn a blind eye to what went on in there and say, oh, well, that's war. War is hell. Do we as Americans look at a mass grave of 750 women and children and say, well, that's war? Are we as Americans willing to settle for that? Are we? In this day and age of the smart weapons they're talking about, when they had the shock and awe in Baghdad and said they killed hardly any civilians, was it necessary to dig a mass grave for 750 women and children? It makes me sick to think about it. It makes me sick to think any military commander would order such an assault. It makes me sick to think that any commander-in-chief would okay such a mission. And what did it accomplish? Nothing. Nothing positive. Just the opposite. My God. What an awful story. What an absolutely awful story. Well, we're going to take a little break, and we're going to come back in just a couple of minutes, so don't go away.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich. How much can we take? How much can we give? How much is too much, and how much longer can we live? As we turn our backs, turn our eyes, and greet, and we don't see. If ignorance is bliss, then horse will drown us in the stream. Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrows will depend on what we do today. Don't stay the course on a horse that's going the wrong way. Now the political pollution is so thick and dark and dense, it contaminates and poisons common good and common sense. Ignorance and deference and greed so deeply burn. Why must so many be engulfed in flame before they learn? Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrows will depend on what we do today. Don't stay the course on a horse that's going the wrong way. You don't stay the course on a horse that's going the wrong way. How much can we take? How much can we give? How much is too much and how much longer?
How much longer, indeed? How much longer will the American people put up with this? I wonder. We're all safe in our beds every night. Most of our kids aren't off to war. Somebody else's kids are dying. How much more of this will we put up with? It appears that America's patience is coming to an end. Even many of those who originally decided to go along with this war are no longer in favor of it, and rightly so. If you're in favor of staying the course, keeping our troops there, and I would remind you that when asked about getting troops out of there yesterday, Mr. Bush told a reporter that that'll be up to future presidents. Was that a Freudian slip or another idiot statement by the idiot in chief? He said that, you know. What about getting the troops out? He said that'll be up to future presidents, as if he's not planning it at all. And of course, he denied to Helen that he had ever intended to go to war in Iraq in the first place, that he didn't want to, like he wants us to believe that war was his last choice. And oh, how this man has enjoyed over these last 3 years saying that I'm a war president. You know how many times you've heard him say that? I'm a war president. Yeah, he's really proud of that fact. I don't think any other president in our history was proud of the fact that he was a war president. Most of them got stuck in it unwillingly. But not this guy. This is our first preemptive war. It's amazing. The more I think about it, it really is amazing. And you run out of superlatives for something like this after a while because your words start to fail you. I want to cry when I hear somebody like Mark Manning talk about a mass grave of 750 women and children, and that mass grave was caused by the actions of Americans. I weep for those women and children and their families, the parents who are missing children that he was talking about, the children who are missing their parents walking the streets of this destroyed city. But not only that, I weep for the soldiers that had to participate in that, who followed orders of their commanders, ultimately their commander-in-chief. And I weep for the citizens of the United States of America that know this happened. And hopefully everybody, when this documentary gets out, everybody will know this happened. They'll know the horror story that took place there. And if we as a nation don't rise up and tell this administration no more, you will not do this in my name anymore. That's what we've got to do. All of us got to raise our voices in unison and make these people understand that you will not fill another mass grave with women and children in my name. Sickening. Absolutely sickening. Don't know what else to say about it. Well, we're going to stop for the news at the top of the hour. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Guy James Show. And we'll be here with the news.
Now for your daily news update, I'm Ryan Riles, updating you on events in Iraq Wednesday. In response to an insurgent attempt to take over a police station in Madain, which is south of Baghdad, U.S. and Iraqi forces captured 50 insurgent attackers in a two-hour gun battle. Four Iraqi police died in the attempted siege and another five were wounded. Among the captured, one was said to be Syrian. President Bush was on the political trail again, this time in Wheeling, West Virginia, where he spoke strongly in support of Abdul Rahman of Afghanistan. Rahman is a 44-year-old father of two facing the death penalty after it was discovered that he had converted from Islam to Christianity. While in Wheeling, our president also said that he had spoken to the U.S. ambassador to Iraq and General George Casey, commander of all U.S. troops in Iraq, to put pressure on the Iraqi lawmakers to put an end to infighting and unify their fledgling government. Elsewhere in our nation, in Washington, the U.S. Justice Department is issuing indictments on 50 members of the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, also known as FARC. It is believed that FARC is responsible for the distribution of more than half of the world's supply of cocaine. And in a 5-3 decision Wednesday, our U.S. Supreme Court said that police do not have the authority to enter a home if one resident says they can, but another says they can't. The justices stopped just short of directly challenging the U.S. Constitution's ban on unreasonable search and seizures, stating that this ruling only applied to the one case originating in Georgia. In Glendale, Oregon, after 17 days of being stranded in 4-foot snowdrifts in the Oregon mountains, six members of the Stryver family have been rescued. After being forced to ration the Y2K supplies they had stored in their RV, two members of the family decided to leave the RV in an attempt to seek help. They were discovered Tuesday morning by a U.S. Bureau of Land and Management worker. And in Marion County, Florida, ex-teacher Deborah LaFave will not be charged by prosecutors for having sex with one of her 14-year-old students. LaFave was already sentenced to 3 years house arrest and 7 years of probation in Hillsborough County after she admitted to having sex with the boy in November. Turning to business news, GM has reached terms with Delphi to avoid a labor dispute. GM is reportedly offering over 113,000 workers nearly $140,000 each in severance pay and benefits. And just before the closing bell, the New York Stock Exchange is posting nice gains today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up nearly 85 points to just over 11,320, and the NASDAQ was up over 9 to 2303.46. The S&P was up almost 8 points to over 1305, and the Russell 500 was posting gains of 9 points to 745. Finishing up with some current temperatures around the nation, it's 44 degrees in New York, 46 in Washington, D.C., 42 in balmy, a balmy 37 in my hometown of Detroit, 66 in L.A., 52 in Seattle, and right now, high atop the Truth in Broadcasting Tower in southwest Florida, it's a beautiful sunny skies and 80 degrees on The Guy James Show. This has been Ron Riles with your daily news update, and now back to Guy James.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is The Guy James Show.
The world is getting
Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Ah, yes, indeed. 4 minutes and 22 seconds after the hour. Glad to be back with you today. Have a lively program going here. Boy, the music stopped quick, didn't it? Those guys, when they decide to take a break, they take a break. It's, well, it's actually a nice, about 84 degrees here in South Florida right now. An absolutely beautiful day. Another beautiful day in paradise. And I hope you're having a good day where you're at as well. I would encourage you to give us a call. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We'd like to hear your opinion on the horror story that took place in Fallujah. How'd you like to live in a place like that? You're an average guy with, what do they say, an average of six, seven, eight kids in a family, trying to make a living. It's tough enough anyway. And along comes a military and levels your town, takes your job away, takes your house away, takes your ability to feed your family away, kicks you out and says, I don't care where you go, but get out of here. But I'm an innocent civilian. I don't care. We're going to level your city. I don't know. Hey, let's turn to something a little less stressful. Somebody sent me a great list here of the things you have to believe to be a Republican today. Okay, these are the things you must believe if you're going to be a Republican today. You have to believe that Jesus loves you and shares your hatred of homosexuals and Hillary Clinton. You have to believe that Saddam was a good guy when Reagan armed him, a bad guy when Bush's daddy made war on him, a good guy when Cheney did business with him, and a bad guy when Bush needed a we can't find bin Laden diversion. Yes, that's most definitely something that you have to believe as a Republican today. If you're a Republican today, you have to believe that trade with Cuba is wrong because the country is communist, but trade with China and Vietnam is vital to a spirit of international harmony. My. But then they're not needing that Cuban vote out of Miami, the politicians aren't, are they? Okay. If you're a Republican today, you have to believe the United States should get out of the United Nations and our highest national priority is enforcing UN resolutions against Iraq. How many of you heard them talk out of both sides of their mouth on that issue? We went out of the United Nations, they're nothing but, oh gosh, the Iraqis, Saddam, he broke UN resolutions. Which is it? If you're a Republican today, you have to believe that a woman can't be trusted with decisions about her own body, but multinational corporations can make decisions affecting all mankind without regulation. Things you have to believe you're a Republican today, the best way to improve military morale is to praise the troop in speeches while slashing veterans' benefit and combat pay behind the scenes. If you're a Republican today, you need to believe that if condoms are kept out of the school, adolescents won't have sex. Ah, yes. And if you're a Republican today, you're going to have to believe. Now, Ryan, yeah, I noticed you thought that was funny.
Yeah, yes, I did.
You don't believe that if condoms are kept out of the school, adolescents won't have sex?
Oh, good Lord, no.
I got to tell you, I went to a very tiny school. Very tiny school.
Right.
There were no condoms in our school.
There were none in mine either.
No. And, so therefore, I don't think anybody was having sex. not that I'm aware of. Anyway.
Not that you were aware of, really?
No.
I can't say that for my high school.
Oh.
I can't say that for mine.
Oh. Well, all right then. I just thought I'd check with you. Things you have to believe if you're Republican today. A good way to fight terrorism is to belittle our longtime allies and then demand their cooperation and money. You have to believe that providing health care to all Iraqis is a sound policy, but providing health care to all Americans is socialism. HMOs and insurance companies have the best interest of the public in heart. You have to believe that. And, of course, you have to believe that global warming and tobacco's link to cancer are junk science. but creationism should be caught and taught in schools. Now, there's a good one for you. Just yesterday, once again, I saw that guy talking about how the earth was only 6,000 years old. If you are a Republican today, you need to believe a president lying about an extramarital affair is an impeachable offense. But a president lying to enlist support for a war in which thousands die is solid defense policy. And if you're a Republican today, you must believe that government should limit itself to the powers named in the Constitution, which include banning gay marriages and censoring the Internet. I didn't know that our founding fathers had thought so far ahead about banning gay marriage and censoring the Internet. I didn't know that.
Well, maybe they knew Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson were psychic. I don't know.
Oh, that's interesting to know.
That's interesting to know.
Okay. Yeah. If you're a Republican today, you must know that the public has a right to know about Hillary's cattle trades, but George Bush's driving record is none of our business. And if you're a Republican today, being a drug addict is a moral failing and a crime, unless you're a conservative radio host, then it's an illness, and you need our prayers for your recovery. Oh, they couldn't be talking about. Oh, they were. They were talking about Pills Limbaugh. Okay. You must believe that what Clinton did in the 1960s is of vital national interest, but what Bush did in the 80s is irrelevant. If you're Republican today, you must feel free to pass this on. If you don't, why, you'll send it to 10 other people, and we're likely to be stuck with more Republicans in 06 and 08. Friends don't let friends vote Republican. Man, is that... That is the case. You said a mouthful there. Well, I got a feeling that a lot fewer people are going to be voting Republican this time. And, you know, as I've said many times on this program over the years, I differ in ideology with Republicans. But, you know, they believe the way they believe. I believe the way I believe. And we've had honest differences over the years. The two parties have. But these people in power today are not Republicans. They're something other. And it's finally becoming apparent that the people in the Republican Party are discovering that they're something other. They should call themselves the George Bush Party or the Dick Cheney Party. The party we're going to do what we damn well please and don't give a damn what Americans think party. That's pretty much what it is. I think we've got a caller on the line. We've got Juanita. Hello, Juanita.
Hi, how are you doing?
Welcome to the program.
Hi, I would like to say a couple of things about Iraq.
Sure.
Well, maybe the saddest part is about those people. You know, I bet they wonder what in the world have they done to deserve all the things they've been going through all these years.
Sure.
You know, and I think about here in Florida, you know, that a couple of years ago we had to, the tornadoes to come through here, one right after the other. And we were without lights and some people without water and all, you know, for probably a month altogether. And it was very inconvenient. But those people very seldom have it, you know, for one thing. And I just think about, why do they have to suffer so much, those people over there?
Yeah, but you know, Juanita, the thing is, they're just Iraqis. You know?
Yeah, I know.
They're just the Rockies. No, you know, we don't care. That's the attitude I get.
But, you know, naturally I don't agree with that, and I know you don't either.
No.
But the other thing, if it's so great over there, why don't Bush and all of them go on their vacation to Baghdad?
Well, they ought to, and outside of
they
the green
should.
Zone. Yeah, let's stay out of the green zone. Let's just roam
right
around Baghdad and see how well you can drive around if it's safe and nice and pleasant there.
Uh-huh.
Did
yeah.
you see Laura Ingraham? Juanita, did you see Laura Ingraham?
I can't stand her. I turned her. What did she say?
Well, she's on with James Carville, and she's
oh,
saying,
really?
You weren't in Baghdad. I was, and I went all around, and I saw that there was far more good than bad. You know, it's an odd thing that she's the only one who's seen that. What kind of a person are you when you'll sit and propagandize people in that manner? That really bothers me.
Right, right. But it's really, you know, it's really a tragedy. But a lot of the TV church people, you know, are they're saying the same thing, and a lot of people think that if they say it, it must be so.
Oh, yeah. You're right about the church people. And you know, I just read again the other day that here we had Rick Santorum appealing to the fundies once again to preach from the pulpit. Don't be afraid to get involved in political issues from the pulpit, and you know exactly what he's talking about.
Uh-huh.
And good old Rick Santorum. I sure hope he loses his seat in the
Senate. I do, too.
I think it's entirely possible that he might lose it, too.
He's been so goofy lately, you know. I mean, it should be obvious to even the people there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But did you see about Catherine Harris going to the Kennedy's church?
No.
You know, James Kennedy?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, she went down there and got a standing ovation. You know, she's giving all her fortune, you know, to run in the race. Did
yes.
you know that?
Her $10 million.
Yeah, like that's all she's got. Her grandfather was the richest, maybe one of the richest, or maybe the richest man in Florida.
Yeah, and
Hill Griffin.
Yeah, and I just got such a kick out of her the other day. She said, people think we had money. We didn't have money. All we had was land. That's she said.
Oh,
all we had was
bull.
Land. Yeah. Which,
oh, bull.
Yeah.
Where did she get all her surgery?
Yeah.
If she
now, Anita.
You know she's promoting that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly right. But I just thought I'd croak when I heard her say the other day.
I know. Oh gosh, bless her heart. She said. It's like the widow's mite. Can you imagine saying that? I'd be afraid to.
Yeah. She said, we live from paycheck to paycheck just like everybody else. All we had was land.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So. Uh-huh. Well, maybe that's all she'll end up with if she gives all she has.
Well, I got a feeling that no matter what, she's going to lose. And I'm not all that enamored with Bill Nelson.
No, I've been disappointed with him.
It's one of those things I'm going to have to hold my nose and vote.
I'd rather have him, believe me, though,
yeah,
than her.
Me too, and I think the Democrat Party is counting on that this year.
Yeah.
Juanita, thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
Good to hear from you. It really is.
You too, and I'm so sorry about your little doggy, but I'm glad
you
got another one.
Yeah, we got another one, and the little dog is doing good. And,
yeah.
And after the show, I got to go visit with the little dog. He's going to be anxious to see me again,
I'm
pretty sure. But, you know, it is an odd thing, and it does point out that another day always dawns. And as heartsick as I still am about the other dog,
mm-hmm.
this new little dog's bringing some joy into our lives, and that helps take some of the sting away. It really does.
And I believe our pets go to heaven. I really believe that.
Well, it's I tell you, I
truly believe it.
Our pets are. I don't know. I don't want to go through that again. But anyway, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very, very much for calling.
You're
Thanks
very
for your concern.
Welcome.
Yeah, a little update on the dog. The little puppy's doing fine. Little Kukla.
Yeah, I checked in on Kukla a little while ago. She was all excited to see me.
Oh, okay. That little tail just
mile a minute. Mile a minute.
I'm afraid that little dog's getting wrapped around my heart. Got me wrapped around a little paw too.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that I shouldn't tell people this, but what the heck? I'm a guy and I'm a big guy, and I always you present yourself as this big, tough guy, you know, and people think you are. They think you're big and tough and gruff and all that sort of thing. I took pillows to the living room floor last night and kept a little, because I didn't want the doggy to be down there by itself and still. So I stayed right outside his little cage last night because I didn't want it to cry.
That's very nice of you.
Yeah.
You got to stop letting that information out, though, you see.
I know. I'm a sucker. That little dog, probably now, if it has a little dog friend, be telling, well, I got him.
I'm afraid most of our male demographic just went, guy, you just clicked over it.
Well, I think if they see this little puppy, they'd understand.
Yeah,
they
would. She is adorable.
Yep. Kukla. And again, that means doll in Greek, and she is a doll anyway. But thanks. And you know what? I got a ton of email about that yesterday. I didn't realize that was going to bring up the concerns of so many people, but got tons of people that said, oh, I've got a Yorkie, and I know exactly how you feel, and I've got a cat, and I've got a dog. And it's nice to know that I'm talking to so many people who love their pets. And I think if you love your pets, you've got a good heart. And it takes a good heart to be tolerant of the little things a pet does to annoy you. And you know, chewing up your furniture and ruining your rugs and all that sort of thing. But I guess I'm of a mind right now that this little dog can just have the house. Go ahead. I don't care. It's one of those things. But anyway, not going to make it into the TIB studios, though. That's one thing. The TIB studio high atop the TIB building here. We're on the third floor, actually. We're going to keep that sacrosanct and no dogs allowed.
No dogs allowed?
No.
None?
Well, maybe once or twice.
Maybe once or twice. Yeah, I could see her sitting in your lap right now. I mean, don't make that statement if you're not going to adhere to it
yeah,
now.
Well, I guess, yeah. Okay, I won't make the statement. I won't make the statement, that's for sure.
I mean, you're a man of your word, so.
That's right. I am that. 866-546-5254. If you'd like to call the program, we'd love to hear from you. I'd like to remind you that, once again, that Helen Thomas is going to be with us tomorrow. I always love talking to Helen Thomas. I told her earlier today, and like I said, she's got a wonderful sense of humor. I told her earlier today that she was the only reporter in Washington with, if it was a guy, you know, I'd be saying with gonads or something, and I pretty much alluded to that. And she just started laughing. She said, well, maybe. And she's just a funny, funny lady. She's got a sense of, a wonderful, warm sense of humor. And, you know, when you see her at the press conferences, she's got her game face on. She does. And she should, damn it. If you're gonna be sitting out there asking softball questions, oh, Mr. President, tell us how wonderful it is in Iraq right now, you don't belong there. You just don't belong in the press corps. The Fourth Estate's here to help inform the American people, not suck up to a guy like George W. Bush. And he hates the press. I can't imagine why the press would want to suck up to a guy like him. They know he has nothing but the disdain for the American press. But then again, the way they've been acting as little toadies for Bush here last few years, I guess I don't like him much either. But I do like Helen Thomas. And by the way, once again, she's going to be with us tomorrow. So we are looking forward to that. You know, on this program, we talk a lot about why we literally abhor the tactics of the political right, but sometimes I think I haven't been clear enough on what exactly I think are their main weapons, and they are so devious and deceitful in so many ways that sometimes we fail to hone in on their biggest weapons against us, and, you know, we can think of various things, the swift voting of John Kerry and all the things that rotten, mean, nasty things they've done. But what I see as these neocons' main weapon is the tactic of dividing and conquering America, particularly in the South. And I think, you know, for the past 20 years or so, the neocons have been quietly but constantly working overtime and dividing the people in the South against one another. They've used race, they've used religion as a wedge issue, and to divide the one solid South. And you know, they have divided the solid South. Now, I know that they're going to scream bloody murder when they hear me say this, but I think it's something that they can't possibly deny. They really can't. For the years during the first half of the last century, the South was in turmoil. You know, segregation and discrimination were rampant. I remember when I was a child driving to Florida to see my grandfather with my parents, driving in Rock City, Tennessee, Chattanooga. And up at Rock City, they had restrooms. I remember seeing the signs, black restroom, white restroom. And I remember asking my father about that because I didn't understand. I just didn't understand. And you know, I'm a lot older now, and I still don't understand that. I really don't. But, you know, there was hatred, there was bloodshed because white people couldn't accept the fact that black folks were actually human beings endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They actually treated them like animals, thought they were animals. The lynchings, the beatings, the KKK. It was human behavior at its very worst. And yet the white people of the South saw themselves as deeply religious. I've never been able to reconcile racial hatred with religion, but yet in many of the places where racial hatred was just rampant, the churches were full every Sunday. Somehow people could do that. They could rationalize that. They could be righteous Christians on Sunday and then treat black folks like animals on Monday. I don't think I'll ever understand that. I never will. I know people who are still like that, and I bet some of you do as well. So along comes Jack Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson and a fellow named Martin Luther King. And they said things were going to change one way or another. They saw that hate was destructive to society. They saw a nation that needed to be healed of this terrible hatefulness. They were determined to make things change, to make them change. And they were successful. You know, not 100% successful, but things did improve tremendously. And life for the black folks in America began to improve like never before. Not where it ought to be, but we've made great strides. I marched with Dr. Martin Luther King. I'm proud to say that. I did. And that was a great experience for me. So along comes Ronald Reagan in the 80s, and he proceeds to open up old wounds. He preaches states' rights in the South, and every student of history in the South knows that the words states' rights are code words for segregation and discrimination. It's that simple. States' rights, that's exactly what it means. Instead of saying the out-and-out racial things nowadays, they say that, but we know what they mean. And all many Southern blue-collar people had to hear from Reagan was that their hard-earned tax dollars were being spent on black welfare queens with 12 kids. And you know how that myth was propagated back then. Oh, yeah, I've been in the grocery store when a welfare queen with 12 kids come in and $700 worth of food stamps and went out and put the groceries in a new Cadillac. You know, they fostered that image over and over and over again. You know, Reagan implied these lazy black people are taking your money and spending it on liquor, steak, cigarettes, and fancy cars where you've got to work 50 hours a week just to keep your bills paid. He preached that lesson. He did. Very clever about it, though. He actually convinced blue-collar white Southerners that that was true. He put the hatred not where it ought to be, but over on the black folks. And, you know, the reason you don't have enough is because of those black welfare people. That was his message. Oh, he didn't say it in those exact words. But he knew he was getting the message across. Vote for me, and I'll take that money from those freeloaders and give it back to you, my white friends. But vote for me and the Republicans, because those dirty Democrats will give you everything you have to those dirty, lazy freeloaders. It worked. Oh, how it worked. Reagan was the master. The South began to turn toward the Republicans like never before. And the Reagan legacy in the South absolutely lives on today. It does. So, if that weren't enough to completely put the South in the pocket of the neocons, they came up with something else which would guarantee their success. Since Southerners are known to be, quote, believers more than other parts of the nation, and they'll tell you that, the Bible Belt, the Republican Party sought to appeal to the religious leanings of their Southern voters. This brought out people whom I believe are the real villains in this whole scene. It brought out power-hungry charlatans like Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson and James Dobson, three of my favorite people, as you know. I think they're three of the most evil men that's ever lived in this country because they're two-faced. You know, they eagerly latched on to the Republican Party and did that party's ugly bidding at every opportunity, and they're still doing it. They and thousands of other ministers in the South took this as an opportunity, a door opening, to gain favor with the White House so they could advance their agenda on abortion and privatizing the schools and having a statue of Jesus in every courtyard in the land, every courthouse. That's their agenda. They saw this opportunity, they seized upon it, and they're getting stronger and stronger and stronger every single day, and it scares me, and it ought to scare the hell out of you too. I have seen evidence lately that ever so slightly that facade might be getting cracked a little bit. You know, these people would do away with the separation of church and state, and believe me, if given their way, people would be bailing out of the United States of America to gain religious freedom, just like they did when my ancestors came over here from England back in the late 1600s. Why my family's here. Religious freedom. That's what they want. And with an administration like we've got right now, they're well on their way to achieving that goal of religious intolerance toward anybody who's not Christian, and intolerance toward those who don't see things exactly their way. You know, make no mistake about it, that is what they're after. And the Republicans, well, they're giving it to them. They're going to continue to vote for anybody these neocons run for office, because the neocons are they're going to throw them a bone. And the amazing part about it is, they throw them that bone about abortion. And the Fundies and the Falwells and the Dobsons, they suck that up. And they've got no idea of doing that away with Roe v. Wade. You know, my own ancestors came to this country in 1685 because they wanted the freedom to worship their God any way they wanted to, any way they saw fit. And they came here to escape religious persecution by the King of England. And now, what is it, 321 years later, I'm beginning to know how they felt, because we got our own king. Our own King George. At least that's the way he sees himself. Remember that? Dictatorship wouldn't be so bad as long as I'm the dictator. And we've got our Falwells and our Pat Robertsons, who see anyone not believing the way they do as heathens and outcasts, and going straight to hell in a handbasket. And Bush and his crowd are seeing to it that these people are being catered to. It's a dangerous situation. It's wrong. It's divisive in a way that is absolutely unconscionable and immoral. And it's got to be stopped. They think they got a lock on God. They think they're entitled to the moral high ground because their God is the best. Well, that's not the way it works. Absolutely not the way it works. Well, we're going to stop for a break right now. 866-546-5254. We hope you do give us a call. And we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes. Thank you.
the best that we can. But you can't put your faith in the rulers of men. I wonder in the next life, will our visions collide? Or even in heaven, will we be gentrified?
Oh, yes, it's 4:35 Eastern time here. I don't know what time it is where you're at, because I don't know where you're at. I guess that's a simple way of saying it. I do know we hear from people all around the world on the program, and we're glad to do so. You know, we get into some very interesting conversations with people in other countries. We had one here a while back, about 6 months ago, I think, when we were asking, who's the most free nation on earth? What nation has the most freedom? And I'd like to hear what you think. You know who I heard from? And they all said that they were the most free nations on earth, is people from the Scandinavian countries.
You know, I have a neighbor who's a Swedish national. He would agree with you.
Yeah.
Totally.
The Swedes, the Norwegians, the Danes, they all think they're the, and maybe they are. I don't know. Interesting to see. You know, it's hard for an American to buy that.
Well, you know,
we think we're really free, but when you stop and think about something,
right? Right. Well, you know, in my life, I've been fortunate enough to have a lot of friends from other countries, from Japan, Britain, Germany, Russia, all over the place. And my neighbor in question and I, we happen to be very good friends. And the freedoms that they speak of in general are social freedoms. Culture itself, the social culture itself, how it's built and how people get along with each other, how you never have to worry about whether or not your neighbor or a fellow commuter on the road may stop to help you change a tire that you're having difficulty with. You know, as in this country, we fear doing that because heaven forbid if in the course of helping somebody change their tire, the car drops and breaks the person's arm, they're going to sue us for millions of dollars because we decided to stop and be a good Samaritan and an accident happened. But in those countries and in that part of the world, they tend to have a more social environment towards each other and a more nurturing, caring society enlarged to each other, it seems like to me.
Well, you know, in rural America, I can't speak for urban America, but in rural America, that used to be true here. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, and I know everybody sick of hearing me say when I was a kid, but when I was a kid, we didn't know where the keys to our house were.
Right.
We didn't know.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, when I was a kid, you could go uptown in the little, when we drove into town, you could go down the street and take your pick of automobiles because the keys were all in them. Can you imagine doing that today?
No way.
You know, when we did have any crime, which was really rare, it was somebody from the city that come out and committed the crime, you know.
Right.
I like to tell a story. I hope this guy isn't listening today. Maybe he is.
Yeah, maybe. Huh?
But if he is, he's going to be embarrassed. But I went to a very small school, very small rural school, farm community, where we had maybe 265, 270 kids in all 12
Whoa.
Grades. All 12 grades. And,
wow.
And so when you were a senior, you knew all the first graders. You knew all the second graders. You knew every kid in that school. You knew their parents. Their parents knew you.
Right.
Everybody married each other. That's the way it was. Everything just stayed in there. And it was so innocent.
Right.
That I like to tell the story, and this is the God's truth, that the most scandalous thing that ever happened in my 12 years of school in that building, and I mean it was a scandal, people are still talking about it today, is that Eddie Muckow, who had moved in from town, swore at one of the teachers. And I'm telling you, that was news. Now, Eddie got expelled.
He got expelled.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did he use the F word? What was the word?
No, he didn't use that word. Oh, no.
Oh, no. That would probably
have killed him
for that.
That.
Right, yeah.
No, he swore to teacher Mr. Pitt, and he did. And man. And they expelled him.
Oh, my
and,
God.
And, you know, Eddie was the what was that guy on Happy Days? Fonzie. He had a motorcycle and a blast jacket. You know, we didn't know what that was.
Oh, he was one of those.
He rode in for a hood.
Yeah, yes.
Do they still use that term, hood?
Yes, they sure do.
Okay, well, Eddie, I'm sorry. He's probably a judge someplace now. I don't know. but he got actually expelled. And, you know, that rolled across the community like an earthquake. I mean, everybody knew about it within 15 minutes. The phones, you know.
Wow.
Eddie Mungo got thrown out of school.
Wow. I couldn't even picture something like that.
And I tell people that today, and they look at me and go, you hick, you. You must have really. But, you know, it was sweet. It really was.
Right, yeah.
It really was. I mean, we had classes in school. I remember, why am I doing this? I remember taking trigonometry, and there was three of us. You know, you take advanced chemistry. We'd have three, four in a class. I mean, you're talking real hands-on.
Wow. You got a good education.
Oh, yeah. It was fabulous. But, Eddie, if you're listening, I'm sorry to have outed you like that, but you're already out back in my home community. Yeah. Ah, yes. The age of innocence. And I really believe it was the age of innocence. And I sometimes feel sorry for the kids today. They've got... you know, I was just watching a program last night on TV late, real late, in the middle of the night, actually, because a little puppy was, you know. And so they were talking about these kids, I can't think of the word they were using now, about how stressed out kids are today because of all the gadgets. I mean, you got to remember, and even myself, and I know you too, think of all the phone numbers you got to remember today. Think of all the on the internet and all the things you know. It's I don't know. I sometimes think I'm losing my memory, but then I think no, it's just that I've got 100 times more to remember than I used to. Are someone of your tender age? Do you have that problem?
You know, I agree with you, but if it wasn't for, you know, I guess it's a two-way street. If it weren't for the gadgets, we wouldn't need all the information. But if it weren't for the gadgets, we'd have no place for that information.
Well,
there's a lot there to learn. There is a lot there to remember anyways. Yeah.
I'll tell you how serious it is, how bad it is. I've got one, you know, everybody does on their cell phone. You can set it so you can open up and say, hey, connect me to, you know, Joe Smith, and it dials
right.
Joe Smith.
Yeah.
Well, there's something wrong with my phone today, and it doesn't want to accept.
Voice commands?
Yeah, and it'll say, did you say Ralph Miller? No, I said Joe Smith. And he'll come back and say, did you say Ralph Miller? And I say, no. And my phone's arguing with me. and you think I can find Joe Smith's number in that phone someplace? Oh, no. It's in there.
It's in there.
Oh, yeah. It's in there.
But who knows where.
But you know, here we are when my damn phone won't listen to me. I think that's it's pretty bad when a talk show host is, you know, your phone won't. You?
Right, yeah.
I don't know. Now that I've given everybody the impression that I'm incredibly stupid and naive.
Okay, I'm the same way. Don't single yourself
we're both
out
stupid
on that.
And naive. Okay.
Nail us both on that.
Yeah, that's life nowadays. And how many of you got a file on your computer where you've got all your passwords and everything stored that you can't remember them all? I guess if you're smart, you do that. I'm not smart enough to do that. My computer crashes, I'm pretty much screwed. I just have to ditch everything. But it's fascinating all the stuff that we've got to remember nowadays. In preparing for the show every day, I'm making files and doing this and that and picking out a little bit of music that we have here, there, and every place. And I put it someplace and then I can't find it. And you know, I'm getting better at it. Well, anyway. 866-546-5254. Not very lively phones today. You know, we're not supposed to say that if we're really professional, and we would just act like it weren't so. But I must say that our callers are not very lively today.
No, not like yesterday, but maybe it's because we haven't used enough swear words on the show. We are on the internet. They could be expecting us to swear. They could,
well, I could read that hate mail I got yesterday. That would satisfy a lot of people
if they needed their daily swear fix.
Oh,
yeah,
yeah. George Carlin would have been proud of this guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
to
use all
this?
Seven of them and some
really?
More.
Oh, excellent.
I think there's actually 14 in it. There's three that I didn't. I had to look them up.
I'd read that then. Heck yeah.
And, you know, and they start mentioning my mother and you know, all that stuff. Geez. It's incredible. All over politics.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, I know. Hey, we're gonna pause for a break right now, and we'll be back in just a moment or two. So don't go anywhere.
Will she come back? I kinda doubt it. I feel so lonesome, I'm gonna sing about it. Ain't got no money to win or lose. All I've got are the lonesome banjo blues. No turf or coal for the kitchen fire. It's damp and cold, it might even snow. But I've got an easy chair, and I've got a banjo. Sit by the mirror, we'll play as a duo. Sit by the mirror, we'll play as a duo. Or Paraguay, but I got a world atlas and now I'm far away. I think of my granddad, I think of my brothers, I think when my daddy tucked us under the covers. I had a relation, it took a while to create it. Life was too easy, I had to complicate it. Now I've got this picture, and I've got a banjo. Sit by the mirror, we'll play as a trio. Sit by the mirror, we'll play as a trio. To be sure, since I've got nowhere to go, could find employment, could find enjoyment, could find an armchair to wonder where the time went. I had a darling, it took a while to find her. Why'd I have to be such a restless double timer? Now I've got this banjo, not much to say. Sit by my bedside all alone and play.
yeah, the haunting sounds of that banjo. I like that for some reason. I do. I really do. You might think I have strange music. I like so many different kinds of music. I really do. I try and find something appropriate for political talk, but once in a while something that's not political at all, and I just like the haunting sounds of the banjo and that music. I think we're going to go to the phones right now. Then we got Peter in Tallahassee. Hi, Peter. How are you doing today?
Good afternoon, Guy. I'm doing great today, and I'm calling for a couple of reasons. Really, one is I made a big boo-boo when I called yesterday and was inviting people to stop by the chat room. We'd sure like to build up a chat to go along with your show. I'd be, you know, it's just your show's perfect for that. But I gave out the wrong URL. I couldn't believe it. the actual URL, if anybody would like to join us, and we'd love to see you, is headonradionetwork.com. It's HEADON, radionetwork.com with no spaces, and that'll take you to it. Just click on chat. And I'm sorry I left the wrong URL yesterday. And the other thing I wanted to tell you, I have found out where bird flu comes from. It seems that we have another Pat Robertson on our hands now.
Oh, boy.
This guy is over in Israel, and he's a rabbi, and he has declared quite publicly in all the papers over there that the gays are causing the bird flu, and that it's the wrath of God. And
the gays are causing the bird flu.
The bird flu. Yes, it's punishment for. You could quote it chapter and verse from Pat Robertson. It's just unbelievable. Goes on and on about, you know, goes against nature. And
well, you know, what I'd like to know is, we keep hearing how God is punishing people for this, that, and the other thing. Why does God keep thinking up new things? Wasn't flood and fire and pestilence good enough?
Well, you know, I would think so. That's a very good point. What do you have to mess with the poor bird?
Yeah. I mean, I just don't get it. Those things work really well.
Well, it certainly did. If you're going to have an Old Testament God of wrath, for crying out loud, let's have Old Testament punishment.
Yeah. You know, do we find an ark someday on the top of I don't know, Mount Everest, another Noah's Ark. Well, it's going to be a big one this time. There's a few more people around this time, but I guess a few fewer animals from what I hear.
Way global warming is going, I don't know how much longer any of us are going to be around. I'm very discouraged by what I'm reading about the global warming thing. You know, for so many years it was like that. With the cigarette industry, there'd be a report that said it was linked to cancer, and then another report that would come out immediately after saying, no, there's no conclusive evidence. And, you know, later you find out that all the inconclusive reports were all paid for by the tobacco industry. And, of course, the same thing's going on with the oil industry paying for the inconclusive whether or not there's global warming. But I think that cat's coming out of the bag now, but it's a little too late. I really think that we're spiraling out of control on this.
Well, we are, and I wouldn't be surprised if we do have a pandemic again some of these days. But I go back to my original question: why would God bother to keep thinking up new things when the old ones work perfectly well? And you know, with no effort, you could just pull one out of the drawer again. I mean, a good hurricane, an earthquake, man, those things, they're good. They're really good.
Absolutely.
And how are we making sure that the gays are the ones that get the bird flu? Is there a certain way that we're...
Well, that's the other side of it, too. I mean, God's not only punishing all the birds, he's punishing the children that are getting it,
yeah.
And he's punishing the adults that are getting it. It's just a little bit too broad brush for me.
Yeah, I just think he's better than that. You know, if that's how he decided to do it, he could be much, much more selective than that.
Exactly. That kind of ties into the way I feel about the death penalty. You know, this thing, I was reading the wording of a death penalty sentence the other day, and it went along the lines of, you forfeited these heinous crimes, and they were heinous crimes. I won't go into what it was, but you forfeited your right to live. It was the actual wording of the judgment, and this person was sentenced to the death penalty. And it just seems to me that if life is God given, which seems to be the line of thinking there, then where does the state get the right to take it away? I mean, if God wanted the person taken out, he'd drop them dead in a heartbeat.
I think it would be pretty simple, yeah.
So many things just don't make any sense to me. The older I get, Guy, the less I understand.
Well, that's true. We're supposed to be getting smarter as we get older, and I agree with you. The older we get, the more questions I have. The more questioning I do. I'm far more inquisitive now than I used to be. I used to take things at face value, and I don't anymore.
Well, great.
I'm become a cynic, I think.
Well, yeah, it's...
Well, I'll tell you now, if you're going to call in from now on and give us a false URL, you are probably going to lose your keys as the director of the Tallahassee Bureau to the building up there. We may have to have you turn them in because, your beautiful office isn't up there.
No.
You may have to,
We've got air conditioning. We've got an aviary, and none of the birds are sick. Yeah, I'll lose all that.
There's a lot of sickness in Tallahassee, though. I can tell you that.
That's the damn truth.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for your call.
Thank you, sir. Have a
good
day.
Good to hear from you. Look out for those birds.
Okay, then. Bye.
My oh my, God's going to get us. You know, I'm always amused by that. Guys like your Robertson and this guy. He's talking about everything. I found out that God's going to punish you. God told me. He told me that he's going to inflict this bird flu on you, and, man, you're going to be wasted for being, you get guys like Fred Phelps. You know who Fred Phelps is?
The name rings a bell, but I can't say.
He's the guy that goes around to funerals when he finds out someone's gay.
And he goes
to funerals and... these ugly demonstrations.
Right, yeah.
He's filth.
Right.
He's human excrement. He's filth is what he is. And yet there are people who just, I'm amazed when I see people out following somebody like that. Like, whoa, mama.
It's very telling to people who aren't as religious as those who attend church once or twice a week when somebody like Pat Robertson says something like this. It strikes an immoral nerve in us. This doesn't make sense. Why? What would cause you to think that this is a God-given plague in response to the gay movement or the gay belief set of sexual beliefs that are out there? Who cares? That's somebody else.
You can you come home from a sermon like that, and you can see Ma and Paul Kettle driving along. You don't know who Ma and Paul Kettle is, do you?
Oh, yeah. I see Ma and Paul Kettle every day on the roads in Collier County.
Okay, well,
yeah.
that's a low blow.
Every day on the roads in Collier County.
Grand prize, if you can tell me who played the part of Ma Kettle.
Oh, I know.
Marjorie Main was her name, a delightful character. But, they're driving home from one of those services from Robertson's. Well, Ma, he said them queers is the... They're the ones that's causing everything around here, and then you go home, they tell their idiot relatives the same thing, and it just passes on and on and on. I don't know.
Just starts the trend all over again.
Yeah, it is.
All over again.
Well, I hope we've provided you with fun and frivolity today and a little bit of serious conversation as well. We're trying to do that every day on the program, and we really appreciate the comments we've been getting from you so far. We've got a lot of new things and new ideas we're going to do with the show. We've got a lot of production things we want to do yet. We're going to get the I'm just about able to get the few minutes of Republican Love up and running. I got some.
Yeah.
I got a few little treasures this week, and even one of my people that doesn't like me very much, I noticed posted on his website that he knew we were back, and so
yeah.
I'm back.
Yeah.
Going to be interesting. Well, anyway, thanks so much for being with us today. We're happy to have been able to be with you and discuss the news and our views and all that. We'll be back tomorrow. Helen Thomas is going to be with us tomorrow, and I'll just tell you, rather than tease you, she's going to be with us around 3:30, I think it is. So, but you better be here at 3. That's no excuse. So come back and visit with us again tomorrow. We're looking forward to it. In the meantime... You heard from the radical right. All that's left is the truth. This has been The Guy James Show, www.theguyjamesshow.com. See you tomorrow.